The documentary Trek Nation aired on Science Channel in late November. This film followed a man on a quest to learn more about Star Trek's creator Gene Roddenberry. That man was none other than Rod Roddenberry, and he's with me right now. Mr. Roddenberry, thanks for joining me.
Well, it's a complete pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Ah, absolutely. Now, just a clear thing.
Is it here or is it there? I'm trying to figure out. I said here, but is it here or is it there? Where am I, actually?
That's a good question. Yeah. That's the beauty of the internet there.
Yes, exactly. I'm everywhere right now.
Yes, we're all over.
That's
now,
right.
Just to make sure people think they heard me wrong, this Trek Nation did indeed air on Science Channel. That was kind of an interesting place for it. So how did it find a home there?
Well, the short version of that, none of my answers you'll find are simple, easy, or short. we had a I've been working on this documentary for many years with a pretty amazing team of people, and it was hard to see the forest through the trees on this thing because it was so personal. And we had a final cut that we thought was maybe between 80 and 90% there, but it was definitely lacking something. We pitched it around to a number of the studios, and it was rejected. None of us were too surprised because our hope was to get them interested enough where they could come on board and help us. We pitched it around, got a lot of rejections, but finally, Discovery, who owns Science Channel, came on board and said, you know what, we do see the potential. We do see what you're doing. We do think it's wonderful. We'd like to come aboard and make this what it could be. And so that's how it happened.
Okay, well, very interesting. So they pretty much just, they heard you were banging on doors, I guess. And
essentially, and they were one of the doors we were banging on, and they saw the potential, which was great.
Yeah, and it really does seem to fit in well. Science Channel recently has done a lot of things with, they've got a show, Prophets of Science Fiction and everything. And so I kind of noticed that Trek Nation, the commercials for it aired a lot during that series. So it does actually fit in with some of their programming nowadays.
Yeah, it really does. We felt it was extremely appropriate. And the kind of stuff that they show, and I'm grouping science and discovery together, was really where we wanted this to be anyways. This isn't science fiction what we're doing. We're talking about someone who created science fiction, but someone who created much more than just science fiction, someone who created a philosophy, an ideology. And of course, that's my father. And I think it's just, as you just said, so appropriate for that, that network.
Yep. Absolutely. Now you did mention that you'd been working on this for a lot of years. I mean, I noticed that watching the film that, I mean, you had interviews even with your late mother who passed away in 2008. So when did all this start?
Around 2001. I was inspired by a documentary called Trekkies. Now, to clarify, Trekkies came out, and it showed the extreme sides of fandom. It didn't show them in the best light and sensationalized what fandom was about. Some of these people would dress up as Klingons on the weekend, but then go back to their job as a lawyer during the week. And I met doctors, lawyers, teachers, athletes, astronauts, who were all Star Trek fans. And they were down-to-earth people who simply had a passion for Star Trek and its philosophy.
Right.
So I basically, in meeting with them and spending that time with them, I wanted to tell their story. Now, I found a company by the name of Atmosphere Pictures, and they were working on some Star Trek spots, little pre-commercials in between episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I noticed that these sort of pre-commercials were not just trying to sell Star Trek, but they were actually talking about its philosophy. And I realized this was a group I wanted to get involved with. I ended up talking to them, and my early on co-producer came in and said, you know, this really needs to be a father-son idea. And I was rebellious to that then because it just didn't make sense to me to bring in my father. To be honest, it just didn't resonate right off. I wanted to tell a story about fans, but it evolved into a father-son story. And now, of course, I see that that was the right way to go, and they deserve the credit for that for sure.
Okay, well, yeah, very much. Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that, I mean, it was sort of marketed in the end to be much more of you kind of taking this journey to learn more about your father, but I thought it really did become this almost a love letter to fans of all kinds, and that it did show them, and it wasn't the extreme side. It wasn't just the one guy in costume that the news people always try to find whenever there's a convention in town and that sort of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I can make so many comparisons, but and there's so much in this documentary that wasn't seen. There's so much we shot. I'd say about 95% of the interviews we did, you did not see in this documentary.
Wow.
Because I'd never done a documentary before. And the people I was working with, we just got together every few months and shot interview after interview. And some of it was just fans, and then we would find celebrities, and then we would find people who worked on Star Trek, and then we would find people who knew my father, and we would just shoot and shoot and shoot. So there's tons of extras, and of course we hope to have those on the DVD, but how do you compress my father's entire life and the entire Star Trek phenomenon into a 90-minute documentary? It's next to impossible. That has a lot to do with why it took so long, and also... I have to give credit to New Animal Productions because they came on board in the last year and they really kind of revised what we had put together beginning to end and really made it into something special.
Now, as you said, it started out just kind of exploring Star Trek, but it did turn into this father-son story. Was it... did it get a little difficult when you started uncovering, started talking with some of the people that had worked with your father? Someone described this as being sort of a warts and all view of Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek. Were you a little surprised? Did it get a little uncomfortable when you started hearing some of these stories?
Yes and no. It was important to me that we didn't do another A&E biography on my father. A&E had already done that. And I think a lot of the fans and a lot of people out there have already heard that. At the same time, my goal was not out there to trash him or ruin the name in any way, shape, or form. But I wanted this to be an honest look through the perspective of his son at the man and the myth. The words I use, I wanted to humanize him. From a young age, the fans have always put my father on this huge pedestal, and they've called him a genius, a visionary. It's this mythical status they've given him. How does a son... How does anyone identify with someone that's placed so high up? So my intention was to find the good, the bad, and the ugly, humanize him, and say, in spite of him being human and flawed like we all are, he still came up with this magnificent vision of the future and worked his ass off to get it out there. And that makes me love him more, and hopefully in the end, I hope the audience respects and loves him more.
Yeah, very much. I mean, you're right. I think I said that after I watched the film. I posted in the forums that we've always heard about Gene Roddenberry the creator and Gene Roddenberry the genius, and as you said, and very seldom we hadn't learned anything about Gene Roddenberry the man. And it was real interesting, right, to actually see him for a person, and like you said, that even just a person, he wasn't sent down from on high to create this show and this ideology or anything. He was just a man with a good idea, and look at us, 50 years later, and we're sitting here talking about it.
Yeah. And it sounds like a stupid statement for me to make, to say he was human. Of course, everyone out there knows he was human, but it was just more sort of the perspective and what was sort of the position he was placed in and revered for so many fans. It was just so important to humanize him from my point of view. To follow that up, to humanize him, not just so people can identify and appreciate him, but I do want anyone who sees this, who does appreciate and, dare I say, revere him, to know that, anyone who's got passion and a vision and the drive to see it through, anyone can become, it sounds very arrogant to say, and I don't mean it this way, but can become a Gene Roddenberry, can become special, can become amazing.
As it kind of came to light what you were doing, and there was this sort of quest to humanize him, did you get any kind of pushback from any of the people involved that you talked to, any of the fans, about that you were sort of, I don't want to say knocking him off his pedestal, but, in so many words?
I haven't gotten pushback. What was actually surprisingly difficult is that, in my life I've heard through the grapevine, a number of stories about him that aren't necessarily good. I don't know if they're true or not, but there's, in his business, in his line of work, in fact, I'm sure in everyone's line of work throughout life, you unfortunately make I hate to say you make enemies, but people somehow misunderstand, whatever the case is, not everyone is your friend.
Right.
And it was difficult to get those people to talk to me, his son, because they thought that I wanted to defend him. And the truth was is that I really wanted to have an open dialogue, hear their point of view of what the scenario or situation was, and then, you know, talk to other people. And it was just important. It was a real journey for me to hear the bad and the good, and then find something, you know, find a middle ground where Gene existed. I'm not saying I believe everything they say. I'm also not saying that they're 100% wrong. There's truths to everyone's points of view, and I just wanted some perspective.
What, was there any moments, though, as you were doing this? I mean, having a camera following you around while you're talking to these people and they're telling you all these things, was there sort of ever a moment where you thought, maybe this wasn't such a good idea?
You know, I don't know if that came across my mind, but there is definitely plenty of awkwardness. You know, you want people to be genuine, and you want to tell them, hey, listen, it's just me and you talking. So go ahead, feel free to be open and tell me your true feelings. When there's a crew behind you and a camera on the person, and they're talking to the son of Gene Roddenberry, they're not so inclined to share their truest feelings or say anything that might be perceived as derogatory or negative.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't necessarily answer your question, but no, there wasn't a time where I could tell you in the editing process, in a number of our earlier edits, we did some home video footage of me and my mother talking about the documentary and my father, and my mother and I would bump heads as well. And there were some moments in there that I was like, God, I really come off like an ass like on this, you know? And the way it cut together, the fact that they don't show that this is sort of somewhat normal for us, and there was a whole conversation before that you didn't get, so you don't know the context. I don't know if, without showing all of it, I don't want to put it out there. I didn't have a problem being honest and being shown in certain lights, but I wanted it to be balanced. I wouldn't want it to be out of context and just showing the clip of me and my mother arguing. There's
right.
a whole thing that led up to this argument that no one saw. And so, and that was the problem as well. Trying to include my mother, I loved her tremendously. I love her tremendously now. She deserves a documentary of her own. It was so difficult because we cut out so much of my mother, because how do you get into this stuff without opening a can of worms?
Right.
It was so important to get her in there. And I felt, you know what I felt guilty about? Is that before this came out, I felt guilty. People are going to be mad at me because I put so little of my mother in here. And that wasn't out of disrespect for her, but every time we tried to cut more in, it was like, why would you end it now? She just said something good.
Right.
Keep going with that. And it would become a different documentary.
You know, it's one thing to do this sort of honest look at people, but it's another to air the family's dirty laundry sort of thing.
Yep.
And so you got to kind of walk that line, maybe.
Yeah. No, you're dead on. You're dead on. Absolutely. It is a challenge to be genuine and honest in a documentary without, as you just said, airing dirty laundry. I mean, some of it can come out, but I really think it needs to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to have all points of view and perspectives.
Well, speaking of balance, that's one of the things I really appreciated about the film, was not only was Gene Roddenberry shown very honestly, you weren't shy about portraying yourself very honestly and how you were like when a lot of this was going on. And you know, you like you said, you were just a teenager, and you know, you didn't have these, you're just a kid going to school, or so you were very honest about yourself and where you were then, where you are now. So I thought I really appreciated that fact.
I'm pretty good at forgiving myself. God, I don't know how that comes off, but I know I was a teenager. You know, I know I did dumb things, but I know teenagers do dumb things. You don't fully understand your parents. And in some cases, you don't want to fully understand your parents. And I put as much, I hate to use the word blame, but I put the responsibility on me and my father. You know, I wasn't the best son. He wasn't the best father.
Mm-hmm.
We loved each other tremendously. Unfortunately, he passed away when I was young. He knew I loved him. I know he loved me. I'm good with that. I mean, of course, I wish he was still around. But I'm not going to sit there and blame myself for years and years about it.
So was this, though, sort of, did this kind of become sort of a cathartic sort of journey as well then? Was this able, were you able to, did you have things that you were able to sort of, like you said, forgive yourself for after you kind of talked it through and learned a little bit more about some of the details?
Tremendously so. And not so much that forgiving myself, but there's a lot that didn't make it into the documentary. We had some earlier cuts that really sort of delved into, it sounds so petty when I say it this way, but did my daddy love me scenarios? Because my father truly had two families. He had a Star Trek family that he got to create, and he had his real family. And he really didn't mix the two too much. I had an amazing interview, and Will Wheaton's a friend of mine, and we've had great discussions. And, you know, there's a, to let the cat out of the bag, he told me about a time when my father came on set and stopped production. And it was during the episode where Will Wheaton, or Wesley Crusher, was being promoted to an ensign.
Mm-hmm.
And my father stopped production, came on, and gave Will Wheaton his actual World War II ensign pins.
Wow.
His bars. And when I heard that, when Will told me that, he thought I knew. And, you know, that hit me like a ton of bricks. That's not his real, you know, in my perspective, that's not his real son. I'm
right.
His real son. Not saying I wanted the bars, but I mean, that's a hard thing for someone to take.
Sure.
So it went down that road with a number of other interviews and me sitting in the car talking to my friends, asking questions and self-analyzing and all these things. It was extremely powerful to me, this cut. But when played for other people, it wasn't strong because, and I'm not putting myself down, but who cares about me? This documentary is about Gene Roddenberry. So
right.
It just went too far in that direction and didn't play well to a general audience. But for me, it was extremely important. It was an important part of the journey, to say the least. But it was an important cut for me, too.
So you did mention that you're going to be putting this on a DVD. Will we be seeing some of these cut interviews and some of the scenes on the DVDs?
It is my complete intention to make sure that a lot of the footage and interviews that we got with fans and celebrities and people make it on. There's all sorts of issues to be worked out prior to this, but yes, it is my intention to do that.
So now that this it's done, it's been aired, and now you're working the details on the DVD and everything, I mean, is that sort of the end of your journey as far as, you know, from what we saw, you know, in the film? Is this the end? Are you ready to put it behind you, or is it ongoing?
Both. The journey will always be ongoing because I eat, sleep, and breathe Roddenberry Star Trek, in the sense that I truly believe in the philosophy that my father created in Star Trek. I truly believe in a future where we all work for the greater good, where tolerance isn't enough, but acceptance and appreciation of things that are different. You know, I love the future where things that are different no longer scare us, but we crave that. We seek it out and we appreciate it because we know we grow from it. That is ingrained into me, and it's something I wholeheartedly believe in. So that will continue on. This will continue on. This journey will continue on. However, in terms of the documentary Trek Nation, I think when the DVD comes out, that will be the end of the Trek Nation saga.
That'll be no sequel. No sequel in the works, you're saying?
No. I think we're going to try to work in every bit of goodness into the DVD that comes out, and there will be no sequel. I think the story's been told.
Good. Excellent. I really enjoyed the documentary. Some of the footage that was in there, the interviews were fantastic. But honestly, the highlight, I think, of the thing for me, I wish the audio had still existed, but you had footage from the first Star Trek convention.
I got to say that the fans really came through. We did an open call. We sent it out on Twitter to fans, and we said, hey, we desperately need footage from the first convention. And people came through in droves. So not only do I have the fans to thank for you know, keeping Star Trek alive, teaching me about my father and what Star Trek is, but also for making this documentary even possible. It sounds sort of standard to say, but it's 100% true. The fans made this happen.
Well, I think Star Trek is one of those franchises that can be said very easily and very often. I can't think of any other television show or movie that you can literally whittle it down to it, the fans made it happen. I think Star Trek certainly exemplifies that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They deserve the credit.
Mr. Enver, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk to me. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share a little bit more about Trek Nation.
You're very welcome. I look forward to the DVD release, whenever that may be.
You got it. And just to plug it, it's still airing from time to time on Science Channel. Check your local listings is what I'm supposed to tell everyone.
Yes, exactly. Check your local listings. And, of course, we'll, as soon as we hear about any new airings or whatever, we'll definitely be posting news about it, because I really want to get more people to see this. It was really good, and I really enjoyed it. So thanks very much for talking to me about it.
Awesome. Thank you.